and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rap Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
Clean as a whistle, inside and out.
Oh, that's good.
It's still shit and yellow, though, but other than that... Yeah, nope. Colonoscopy was good. And a lot of good advice I got from friends. One of them, use Vaseline to keep your bum from bleeding. That actually worked. Do an awful lot of wiping when you got to run to the can every 2 minutes.
When you're peeing out your butthole.
I was surprised that I started going like 20 minutes after I took the first dose. Because I was reading it, some people say, well, it could take up to 4 hours, it could take an hour. But I think part of it was because I actually read the doctor's instructions, you know, stop eating high fiber 3 days before, you know, did my liquid diet. Oh, that was the worst part, the day before where you had just the liquid diet. While there's always room for Jell-O, it makes a poor substitute for a good hamburger.
Yes. Now, my thing was, and I've always heard this, the stuff you're taking is basically Miralax. And what Miralax does is it pulls all the liquid out of your body and dumps it right in your colon.
Now, I was taking something else.
It's the same chemical. It has a different name.
They have, because oddly enough, when I got in to do the actual colonoscopy, you know, there's a little bit of prep time where they poke your hand with a needle. And I guess they have plastic needles now, which mean they flex with the vein, whereas before they used to have rigid ones, so you could actually, like, feel it as it, you know, underneath the skin, just like some...
Yes, I know.
...implant. And then they had, you know, they tested my blood, but they ran out of lancet strips, so they weren't quite sure how long the blood would hold its validity to take a blood sugar reading. So as we were sitting there waiting... You know, I listened because apparently there was a new nurse that just showed up, and they started talking to him about what to do. You know, like, ask these questions, look for these things. If you see this on the response form, you got to think of this. Mostly talking about things like blood thinners and, you know, did they actually take what they had to do? And they talked about the stuff I took, and I threw the bottle away, and it's a memory I'm not going to have to repeat for 10 years, but... The stuff I took apparently has electrolytes in it, aka
yes.
Like Gatorade, because they say that's something that you have to watch out for, because if they did take what you said, the Miralax and not the whatever I took, Miralax does not have the electrolytes, so you have to be careful that they're not dehydrated and that their body, you know, could be shutting down or whatever. You know, I'm listening to
yes.
this like, all right, I guess I'm okay. I took the funky Gatorade.
Well, what they did with me, remember, I was in the hospital and I'd had, you know, I hadn't eaten anything for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 days, and I was on an IV. I was, you know, basically they're pumping saline into me, and they took, because Miralax is a powder, they were actually mixing it with Gatorade. The problem was, and the reason it tasted so horrible, was it was unflavored Gatorade, which is basically just, you know, sucrose and salt and water, at room temperature. And when they brought it in, they go, here, you know, you should drink this when it's cold, blah, 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 blah. And I took, you know, drank my first glass, and it was warm. And I called him and I said, this isn't just room temperature, this is warm. They're like, oh my gosh, we left it on top of, you know, they left it, you know, on top of where they cart up everybody's meals. So they brought me in ice. So I'm pouring it over ice. So, you know, you put it in the, you fill your little plastic cup full of ice, and then you pour the stuff in, and half the ice is gone. It's so warm. So, oh, choking that stuff down.
Oh.
And I hadn't eaten anything. So, you know, it says on the instructions, you know, drink until what comes out of you is clear. What came out of me was clear the first time. And I drank 3/4 of the bottle because I kept saying, don't think I could drink anymore. No, you have to keep drinking it. And the first that came out was clear, and the nurse said, well, you know, we're not sure. So I drank the whole bottle. Oh. Everything that came out of me was clear. And what, I started at 7 in the evening and was not done till 2 at night.
See, I started mine at 6. But see, I had to save a liter and take it 5 hours before I went in. So I started at 6, and I think I gulped the last one down at 8:10. In the meantime, you know, they said take it in like 8-ounce increments.
Yep.
One friend recommended use a straw to get it past your tongue because
yeah.
They also said keep hard candy in to suck and keep the taste down, and I had apple juice and I took a little sip, so that helped. And then I didn't stabilize until about 1:30 a.m. where I could actually try to go to sleep without, oh, time to get up. I did discover one thing. It was Sunday night, and usually Sunday night, if I'm stuck inside and I can't go anywhere, I'll watch like Big Bang reruns because Channel 29 or local affiliate will run them. But the problem was, is I had to keep getting up.
Yes.
So I decided, even though I do have a DVR and I can always, stop it, I said, screw that. I started watching the last couple episodes of Lucifer, which I had stored since April. And that was okay because there I was actually into the story and I could pause it, go do what I needed to do, come back. And I think I finished those two episodes about 9 p.m. So it only took me 3 hours to get through the entire thing. I managed to get a little bit of sleep, woke up at 4, gulped. Well, not gulped, but took the final liter, stabilized about 6, got up at 8, showered, shit, forget about shaving, and finally went in to the doctor. I do got to say that the nurses there were very pretty. Ooh. And they were funny.
Joe, on the drugs you were on, a gorilla.
They were funny. Actually, the drugs really didn't dope me up that bad because what happened was they didn't give me any until I got into the actual room. And the doctor came in and talked to me, and he was really funny guy. I mean, he was just, I forget the specialty they call it, but they had a nurse, or not what they call a resident, somebody in training. And do you mind if they sit in? I said, yeah, I don't care. You want to look at my pretty face? I don't mind. And they, he was talking that on Monday, he does 12 of these things in a day.
Oh.
And the rest of the week, they do the actual surgery. So, this is kind of a goof-off day, more or less. And, I went in, and they're like, okay, get on your right side. And
turn to the right.
That's when I noticed they actually had a couple Depends laying flat on the thing. Because I was a little worried about, in between the time, I think at 9 o'clock I went in, I got in about 9:45 because the doctor was running a little behind. That was his joke, not mine. And so we went in. I think Chris decided to go get a cup of coffee across the street, and I was telling the nurse, she's really up for sainthood because she dragged me into this thing before she had her morning cup of coffee. So they had me lay on the side. There were two giant Depends on the gurney, so I didn't feel too bad. And that's when they started, I met the drug dealer, or the nurse who was going to give me the drug. And I was talking to the doctor, and I said, can I get a DVD of this? And he goes, no, we got to, I will try to get some still pictures of you. And, I started watching, and they give you a quick rectal exam. Apparently everything was fine. And then they...
Rectum damn near killed him.
No, actually, it wasn't too bad. It was, they said, it's only as big as this finger. I said, well, this guy's got some big fingers. And I started watching the camera as it was going in. And the next thing I remember is I was sitting up with the aftercare nurse as she was waiting to pull the IV thing out of my hand. I don't remember nothing after that. I swear I was awake the whole time. But Chris said my whole thing took like maybe 10 minutes.
Oh.
Which was really weird because the doctor comes in beforehand and he tells you, the three things. The things that could happen, that rarely happen. You know, they could be a, they could puncture the wall of the colon, which mean you'd be in surgery. They could miss certain microscopic polyps. And there was a third one, but I forget what it was. One of those 1 in 3,000 chances. And I don't remember talking to the doctor afterwards. A friend of mine told me, you know, have somebody come in and actually talk to the doctor because you're not going to remember it.
Right.
And I didn't, because Chris was telling me, yeah, the doc came in and said it was perfect, which he had to guffaw because she's had to suffer through many of my Pearl Harbor attacks. But apparently it's all coming from a perfect colon. He did not find a single polyp, which I thought was odd. But I don't know, maybe so. And I think also the fact that I actually followed the directions in terms of drinking all this goop made it a lot easier. I'm sure there's guys who go out for a steak dinner right after they finish drinking the goop. So not a lot to report there. I mean, they're going to send it off. There's no tissue to send off because they didn't find anything to cut. And they're sending off the actual film to, I don't know.
Michael Bay. It's going to be in the next Transformers movie.
Yep. And they will get back to me in 7 days and let me know if they see anything unusual. But so, yeah, I said the worst part was, and I know you told me and other people, was just that one day you go without eating.
But you made up for it.
No, not yet. I did yesterday. You know, I got home. I think I got home about 11, maybe 11:30. Chris was like, go to bed. I don't want to go to bed. Go to bed. All right, I'll go to bed. Went to bed, woke up at about 2, had the worst headache. I don't know what it was, just stress or something. My shoulders, my neck were inflamed. I sat down. I was rubbing my neck. I took some ibuprofen. I had some buttered toast. Thought, you know, maybe it's time to actually eat. So I had a bowl of cereal. Chris said I had eaten a muffin when I got home, which could explain why I was crapping at the time, because I don't remember eating the muffin, although it did come out yellow. Anyways, I was sitting there, and it was like 3 o'clock, and I just had the headache. It was killing me. And then I'm like, you know what? I think I'm going to throw up. So I did. And after that was done, I felt a lot better. I don't know what it was. You know, I've had these headaches before where you're like, fall off your pillow, you're sleeping so hard you don't even know it, and that's probably what had happened, because I mean, I only had 2 hours of sleep the entire previous day. So we went out to pizza. It was good.
Well, there you go.
And in the meantime, I do know on Sunday, before I doused myself with this liquid from hell, I went with Dana and we actually cleaned out the garage. And we took probably about half of the stuff that we had at the charity booth, things that you and I never sold, and we
tried.
We did try, and we basically, I don't know if donate or re-donate them. We brought them down to a unique thrift store, the one that Sharon works at, because she was so kind to give us all those donations for the, well, we call it SpringCon, but the Comic-Con, formerly known as SpringCon. So I didn't get a chance to tell her that. I didn't know if Sharon was there that early, but this morning I dropped the truckload and a half off. And so that stuff's gone. We do have a lot of the good stuff, and then Dane is going to be soliciting things. So if you've got anything you want to donate, bring it to Fall Comic-Con, the one-day wonder, which will be, Corey, do you remember where it is?
The Edumacation Building.
October 8th, 2016, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Advanced tickets go on sale July 1st, so go to www.mcbacomiccons.com. And I know you'll have a better chance of getting an advanced ticket there than you will going to the San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much. Plus, we'll be there.
And we'll have fewer movie stars.
That's
and,
true.
Also, we will have just as many Marvel Studio executives as San Diego. because the Marvel Studios has said they're not going.
I was, you know, there was a couple.
Oh, we'll have as many Fox Studios executives because Fox Studios said that they aren't going.
I was reading online a thing about Comic-Con pros and cons. One of the things they talked about the cons is that it's not really a comic convention. There's a lot of creators that don't even want to go because nobody else they know is going.
Yep.
And they talked to Chuck Rosinski of Mile High Comics, and he said one of the things they could do would be to make it an 11-day Comic-Con instead of...
Oh, Lord.
Well, what he says is you would have the first weekend you could make, you know, your media events, and then have that Tuesday off, and then the second part of it be more comic-affiliated. And the guys at the Comic-Con, of course, immediately poo-pooed that idea because they're saying, well, there'd be, well, we'd probably get the media people to stay because they always have their interns in that work to show. There's no way any comic retailers could go because there's no way they could be gone 11 days from their shop, and it would probably be the last hurrah of comics.
Probably the same thing for comic creators because I've been reading on the Twitters. There's because it's convention season, there are some editors who are on Twitter basically telling comic creators, hey, quit posting all these pictures of the stuff you're drawing and the fun you're having at conventions when you're not answering my phone calls about why your pages are late.
Ah, yeah, you'd think some of these people would understand that about social media.
Speaking of comics...
We were?
Yeah, well, we are.
Well, let's talk about the topical one.
Well, first...
No, this is first.
No. We got to talk about the show because people are listening. It's just us this week.
Oh, yeah.
It's no special guests.
Well, mainly because Jen was so freaked out about the colonoscopy talk that she decided to hide away. So we can freely talk about our bowel habits without her going, ew!
And we can get into hardcore comic nerddom without her kind of making fun of us.
But we also got a plan for 15 years from now when she goes to get her first one, because you know we're going to do that sucker live. I'll teach her.
And Joe?
Yes.
Yeah, 14 years.
14 years? Ooh.
Yeah.
Getting closer all the time.
That's right. So what was the big comic news that I obviously...
It wasn't news. Oh. It was just something you all had to pull out of your collection and read. Superman versus Muhammad Ali. I actually found my original copy, which is funny because I have the hardcover one because I didn't want to, you know, read my original one in case I damage it. And I have no idea where the hardcover one went. But I pulled that one out mostly because Holly came down and said... Was Muhammad Ali ever in a comic? Which was kind of a weird question to come from her because she doesn't really ask questions like that. And I get why, yes, she was.
Most of the questions she asks are, can I have $20?
Oh, yeah, that was earlier today because she's going to Valley Fair, our amusement park nearby. So I done dug out Superman versus Muhammad Ali and reread it. And the cool thing about it, of course, is the cover. I guess it was originally supposed to be done by Joe Kubert, and for whatever reason, they didn't like what he had done, so they had Neil Gaiman. Neil Adams.
Yeah, they had Neil Gaiman draw.
Neil Gaiman was everywhere.
Back before he'd even gotten into comics.
And they had Neil Adams just draw it, and it's that incredible cover with all those celebrities watching the greatest fight of all time in space. And, of course, on the inside cover, lists everybody.
And they had to get permission from everyone.
And there was one person who didn't give permission, so what they did is they put a mustache on him. Do you remember who?
Yep. No, I don't.
That was John Wayne.
Oh, okay.
There were a couple other ones that I know were on there that didn't give permission. But what I thought was interesting as I was reading through this, first of all, it's a fun book to read, and you can probably find the hardcover somewhere to read. I'm trying to find the credits here.
It was Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams.
Okay, because I know it was Neil Adams. And there's a lot of cool things in here, like when the the alien comes down because, well, initially it starts out Jimmy, Lois, and Clark, and this is pre-crisis, so don't get your Clarks confused. They're looking for Muhammad Ali, and they find him, and he's figuring, since Lois is seeing how you're prettier than Cosell, ask away. He starts interviewing by Lois, and an alien appears and pushes Lois down. So Muhammad Ali, of course, says, "I don't know where you come from, but where I come from, we don't treat folks like that. You owe the lady an apology. Silence! You will speak when spoken to," as he bitch slaps Muhammad Ali. "Oh, you know that ain't happening." Muhammad gets up. "Oh, my. You're in trouble." And bam, just thuds the guy right off. So, I mean, it's just fun reading. And it's a very good plot, too, because I remember when I read this originally, did not see it coming. And, of course, it's got a great Muhammad Ali speech, because, as you know, eventually Muhammad's going to have to fight for Earth. But one thing I didn't know at the tail end, apparently one of the things that Muhammad Ali insisted on in the script is that he would discover who Superman is.
Oh, okay.
And, of course, he's never going to tell anybody. But I didn't realize that was something as I was reading through all the trivia and things about Muhammad Ali. There's a great photo I published somewhere. I actually started my own, as if we ain't got enough pages on Facebook, I started one called Superhero Follies, because I got so many of these goofy pictures of superheroes doing fun stuff. I just decided to make a page of it. And not only do I have, you know, the nice history of Superman, but there's also a picture of him reading the aforementioned Treasury Edition. So if you get a chance, check it out. Corey, did you ever read this? What'd you think of it?
I read it years and years later, and I enjoyed it for what it was. You know, I remember when it came out, because they did a Marvel parody of it over in Spider-Man.
Yes.
Where I forget.
Leon Spinks.
I forget what it was.
Leon,
yeah.
Spinks had won the title from Muhammad Ali by the time this book was published, but he also won it back, so.
But what they did, they had somebody come up to Spider-Man and go, "We want to do a comic book of you fighting Leon Spinks." And Spider-Man said, "Oh, I've heard about you guys. By the time you put it out, somebody else will be champion." And me being, you know, a Marvel zombie at the time, "Oh, ha, ha, DC can't do anything right, ha, ha."
But do you remember the next line?
No.
Besides, I just gave it away to some children's electric company.
Oh, that's right.
So then that made all those Spidey 80s. Super stories canon, more or less.
Even the Thanos copter?
Well, it's kind of the way that lady made all the Rampaging Hulks, you know, her movies.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Hated that.
Yeah.
But I read it in the 80s when I was, you know, discovering DC and was just hungry for anything Neil Adams did. I mean, come on, for the love of God, I read Skate Man.
Yeah.
And it would not have worked if anybody but Neil Adams had drawn it. It was very much dependent upon Neil Adams's art. I thought the story was serviceable. I thought, oh, okay, gimmick story. And really, that's what Superman stories were in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. It was very much a gimmick. Superman's going to fight Muhammad Ali, so they go to a planet where Superman doesn't have his powers. Okay, but really, you're reading it for the Neil Adams art. Now, Joe?
Yeah, and in the format it is, it's beautiful. I mean, you see every line detail and just it is gorgeous.
Those Treasury editions, it's too bad that they really didn't take off as well as other things did. You know, Marvel did these beautiful reprints, and there were like 27, 28 Marvel Treasury Editions, and then a few more for the Batman-Hulk crossover and the Superman-Spider-Man crossover that Marvel did that wasn't very good.
Which one?
The second Superman, Spider-Man?
It was more in the Marvel style.
Yeah, you could tell that John Buscema didn't care. And the story was goofy because it's Superman's chasing Dr. Doom! Dr. Doom! He takes one step into the Latvian embassy. And, "You can't touch me now! I am on Latvian soil!" It's like, oh, Christ, really?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm more political science-orientated, but that's... To me, that was part of the Superman thing. He obeyed the law.
Right, but I do think Superman could fly faster than Dr. Doom could stroll. Superman could go the speed of light, and Dr. Doom was just kind of walking to the Latvian embassy. And anyway, and Buscema's art was really uninspired. But a lot of those Treasury editions, like... the best one, in my opinion, is number 10, which is a Thor Treasury Edition, and it reprints the four-issue story in Thor, Thor versus Magog. And it's just basically, Magog is on his way to Asgard, and Thor and everybody in Asgard throw everything they can and can't stop him. And it's Kirby art, and it's blown up to 17 by 11, and even though it's Vince Coletta, so you blow that art up, and you really see that Vince Coletta didn't give a shit, because it's like, oh, yeah, here's some feathery lines, and here's this, and oh, there were probably characters there. I'll just erase that, and we don't need a background there. But Kirby's art at that size was just... blew you away. You know, Fantastic Four, the first Treasury edition, has the Galactus trilogy in it. But by the time you got into the 80s, they weren't being printed anymore and nobody cared. Marvel did some original stuff in their Treasuries. DC did a lot of original Treasuries because the first Captain Marvel Superman meeting was in a Treasury. They did The Bible by Kubert.
Yeah, I got a hardcover of that, too.
It was a treasury. The Superman Muhammad Ali was a treasury. The other difference was that the DC treasuries were stapled. They were just a big comic book, whereas Marvel's were square-bound. And the problem with Marvel's being square-bound is they really didn't spend a lot. So you get some of those treasuries from Marvel, you want to check them, because if you open the pages all might fall in your lap.
Yeah.
But in a lot of ways, they were the first trade paperbacks. You know, it's, hey, we're going to reprint the best Fantastic Four stories, the best Spider-Man stories, the best this. Conan ones were beautiful because Roy Thomas did a lot of care in picking out the stories. Barry Windsor Smith art in that huge format. Oh. Now, you know DC a little better than I do.
I don't know. I just read DC Rebirth. I don't think I know anything.
Was the Superman Muhammad Ali story in continuity?
It's hard to say because they didn't. The one thing they didn't do that they did in the Shazam Superman fight that I talked about, was it last week or I don't remember? They didn't really refer to any other heroes. You'd think if this big armada that, you know, the thing was, is okay, if Muhammad Ali doesn't win, we're going to destroy the Earth. Or if Superman doesn't win. Well, I forget who it was. But nobody else did anything about the Armada. They didn't even say... You know, it could have been just a throwaway line. If any of the other superheroes of your planet interfere, we will destroy you automatically. Which is weird because Batman's actually on the cover. As are, you know, Hal Jordan and Oliver Queen and Ray Palmer and a bunch of other guys. They even do a quick cameo shot of... oh, who's the Strange Adventure guy? Adam Strange. And his, what was his wife's name?
Oh, I don't remember.
Oh, see, they just don't have this trivia. So it's like something, it's like something inside me has been washed away and I just can't just regurgitate it when I need it.
I didn't read a lot of the DC stuff, and I know that I've got the Adam Strange, the showcase. But, man, reading more than two of those stories, it's like, yeah, this is the same story.
Yeah.
It's the same story. It's the same story. Whereas Marvel was more soap opera rather than the hero must figure out this puzzle to, you know, solve the mystery at DC, whereas Marvel was, oh, it's, you know, they're going to fight Dr. Doom. And, okay, they figured out how to beat Dr. Doom, but now the Submariner is coming. And on and on and on. Which, I like the soap opera stuff better. I've actually quit picking up the Superman showcases unless I find them dirt cheap, because I find that the stories are just such a hard slog to get through. Reading those 60 Superman stories is a chore. Whereas, oh, you know, even Ant-Man at Marvel. Oh, well, that's a fun story. Well, that's goofy and stupid.
I think I said the same thing when I was reading the Phantom Stranger showcase, because it was just the same thing over and over. And I think when they finally got into the 30s, and it didn't really go on too much beyond that, when they actually had a more dynamic story going on, when it got a little more interesting. But just trying to get to that point, it was kind of like, you know, I think I've pretty much read as much as I can.
Now, one of the things that people seem to be writing about and talking about, you sent me an article a couple weeks ago about canon and DC Rebirth, about canon.
You'd never think
everybody's
William Conrad could have pulled off the detective role, but man, for a guy that big, he actually did pretty good.
I don't know. There was one episode of that show I watched when I was doing overnights where I was laughing so hard I had to go outside before I woke anybody up.
Sure it wasn't Jake and the Fat Man?
Oh, yes, I know. It was canon. And what it was, the bad guys had captured him and tied him up and put him in a car. And it was the thing where, okay, we're going to put something on the gas pedal and aim you toward a cliff. And there you go. And what he did, he used his stomach to steer the car away from the cliff. Now, if I were an actor and the plot says that my gut is so big that I can use it to steer a car while I'm tied up, I would go, excuse me, I want to rewrite and I want it now. But no, not that kind of canon. Okay. The canon as to what is part of the ongoing story?
Can I just cheat and say Alan Moore's right and they're all part?
You can, but that's not what we're going to talk about.
Oh, okay.
Because the first time I remember people getting, you know, I remember as a kid with Marvel, Roy Thomas, while he wasn't editor-in-chief, was still kind of in charge. And he made a career out of taking old comic stories and explaining how they fit in with what was going on now. And that was how I read comics, and that's how I thought it was. When I started reading Marvel, they promoted the idea that it wasn't just, you're not just reading Black Goliath. Black Goliath is part of this much larger story, and the entire Marvel Universe is one ongoing story that started in 1939 and is still going on now, and all of it fits. Even when, you know, I picked up the reprint stuff, because I really liked the monster reprints when I was a kid, you know, the Vault of Evil and Where Monsters Dwell and all the stuff that reprinted the Atlas stuff. And every so often they would alter things in those to make them fit modern continuity, to the point where they would, instead of the CIA, they would go, you know, we're going to have to call SHIELD.
Or, and then of course a little footnote for what SHIELD stood for.
Yes. Or in Marvel Tales, remember they reprinted a couple of Ditko stories where he had characters who were drawn like Aunt May and Uncle Ben? And they would put a little editorial blurb in it. Is this what happened with Aunt May and Uncle Ben before Peter Parker came to live with them?
Could be trouble.
Yeah, well, it was that mermaid story.
Yeah, I remember.
And
which I remember through reprints.
Yes. because in the original story it was, no, it was Kirby's, not Kirby, it was Ditko's generic old man and woman. And then over at DC, you'd pick up stuff, and I remember one of the books my grandmother had, because she had all kinds of different comics. One of them was Batman Meets Sergeant Rock. And it was basically that Batman was back in World War II, but he had the Batcave, and everything was the same as it was now, except he was in World War II fighting somebody with Sergeant Rock. And even as a kid, I went, wait, no, that would make Batman in his 50s, and no, that doesn't work. Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
You know, I remember something like that on Brave and Bold, where it was Wildcat and Batman just teamed up. And it wasn't like, you know, well, it was like they were just neighbors or something. And I just figured, okay, well, Wildcat just decided to hop in the boom tube or whatever and transport over to Earth One and hang out with Batman for a while. That's how I kind of reconned it in my brain. It was just, oh, because wouldn't you do that? I mean, you'd be like, you know what? Fuck this Earth. I'm going to Earth Two for a while. Hang out there for a while.
I've decided I've had it with my home planet and everybody I know and everyone I love. I'm going to go hang out over here.
It worked for Black Canary.
All my friends are 30 years younger.
It worked for Black Canary. It worked for Red Tornado. It worked. Could you imagine it? Corey, what? I'm pregnant. Oh, see you later, babe. Got to go to Earth.
Actually, if somebody came to me and said they were pregnant, I'd go, no, that wasn't me. That was the Corey from Earth 2, because the Corey from Earth 1 has been fixed.
Must have been that evil Earth X Corey.
Although
the one without the,
I don't know,
the one without
Joe,
the hair.
Should I tell the story?
Story time.
Should I tell the? I dated a woman who came to me and said, and "This was what 2007." Now, Joe, I got snipped in the year 1999.
Let's go crazy.
So I could party like it was 1999. And if anybody wants to know more about that, email me, because I ain't talking about that story on the show.
He can run around when he wants and always get himself laid. Oh, no.
But 2007, I'm dating this woman, and we've been dating for like 3 months. And we're out to eat, and she goes, well, Corey, yes, I think I might be pregnant. I go, oh. Well, then we probably should break up. Well, what do you mean? You know, it's yours, and I haven't been with anyone else. I said, well, then you're probably not pregnant, because I'm shooting blanks. Oh. Well, and there was a lot of hemming and hawing, and then let's just say that the 3 months, that was the end of the dating.
So for all you women out there that want to bag Corey, that's not the way to do it.
No, that's not the plan.
What were you talking about?
We were talking about Wildcat.
Corey getting women pregnant is not canon. That's the takeaway. Good night, everybody.
Now, how old were you when you read that Wildcat story?
It had to be, well, early 80s, because it was pre-crisis.
Okay.
Because I started out mostly, like you said, a Marvel zombie, picking up almost every Marvel I could get my hands on. Oddly enough, the last two I did were Fantastic Four and X-Men. But and at that time, I had been getting into DC, and Brave and Bold was more or less, I just would buy it every month, and then I would go backwards and pick up ones that were, like, cool. You know, like, I love Phantom Stranger, so picking up Phantom Stranger crossovers were cool.
Now, how did you feel as you read that story, and you knew it didn't fit? You knew it didn't fit, and as you're reading the story, you could tell that the people involved just did not care.
Well, I didn't get that they didn't care, but I think this is where Marvel probably rubbed off on me, because I was always thinking in terms of no prize. My brain would be like, okay, how does this fit? And there's even been times where, like, something's happened, like, that whole Spider-Man year one where it wasn't a microscope that he left it.
Oh, yeah, Spider-Man chapter one by John Byrne.
And
which Marvel completely ignored the minute John Byrne left Spider-Man.
But for me, that was a case of probably somebody punching a wall, even though we hadn't come across that term yet. There was another one like Wolverine where there was a Wolverine. There was a major event going on. Wolverine was tied up, but yet he was down in South America fighting a little girl who talked with Elmer Fudd in her.
Oh, God, I hated those stories.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and to me, that was one of those, okay, this never happened. If it did, it didn't. Because they were like, the events were supposed to be happening at the same time. I don't remember if it was Acts of Vengeance going on at that time. But I was like, there's no way Wolverine could be here and there at the same time.
Yep.
And those type of things bothered me. Sometimes I'd ignore them. Other times I would just, rarely would I be, okay, this never happened. But I'd always try to, I guess like Alan Moore said, they all happen. It was up to me to figure out how. Not that I ever spent a lot of time doing it, because there were always, you know, new issues next week.
Now, when I was a kid, I would say starting about how old was I? Like 10 or 11. I started reading the Doc Savage novels. And I loved them. And I was just devouring them. And then Philip Jose Farmer put out a book called Doc Savage, His Apocalyptic Life. And I don't know if you've read it or not.
Mm-mm.
Let's see. What is... There's... And in this book, he basically said that all of these different pulp heroes and other heroes were all from the same family. It's called the Wald-Newton family. So Doc Savage is related to Tarzan, who's related to Sherlock Holmes, who's related to the Shadow, who's related to this. And he ties them all together. And as I'm reading it, it didn't quite fit in my head. And this is, I don't know, I was 14, 15 years old. I actually got disturbed reading it. Because it's, no, this isn't right. And up until I would say I was 17, 18 years old, if there was a continuity glitch, I didn't think it was, oh, the writer screwed up. It was, this isn't right. Because in my head, I thought that all of these writers coordinated everything. Because, well, Len Wein and Marv Wolfman. Well, Len Wein wrote part one of a story. Marv Wolfman wrote part two. Or in, I often talk about Skull the Slayer, started by Marv Wolfman, then Steve Englehart, and then Bill Mantlow. And it's like, oh, well, they had to be working together because the story, you know, one wrote part one, and somebody else wrote parts two and three, and somebody else wrote part four. They must all be working together and sharing their ideas and da-da-da-da-da. And now I know that no. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't, but most of the time you were just, I'm going to do my stuff. Oh, can I use Dr. Octopus? No, I'm using him in about 3 months, but then I'm going to kill him. So if you bring him back, this is how I'm killing him. And over at DC, because you had editors who didn't really care about continuity at all, you would be dealing with that stuff all the time. I mean, Batman at one point had three different editors, and the editors treated the character very differently. You had the guy who was editing Brave and the Bold, who, you know, he could not care less about continuity. Then you had Julie Schwartz, who, nope, I'm doing these Batman stories, I'm going to treat it a lot like I do the Superman stuff. And then you had the Justice League, where Batman was completed even more differently. And they had to do Crisis to kind of fix everything because none of it worked. And people often say, oh, the reason they did Crisis is because of Earth 1 and Earth 2. That was only part of it. There was also, you know, look at Wonder Girl. The whole Wonder Girl thing, because over in Wonder Woman, they had Wonder Tot, Wonder Girl, and Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
And people who didn't read the books who worked at DC thought they were three different characters, when really, no, when Diana Prince was a baby, she was Wonder Tot. When she was a teenager, she was Wonder Girl. And then when she was grown up, she was Wonder Woman. So all of a sudden, you've got Wonder Girl showing up in the Teen Titans, even though Wonder Girl is Wonder Woman as a teenager. So it was all that sort of crap they had to fix. And DC still is fixing their canon all the time. Joe, which Hawkman stories are in canon and which ones aren't?
No idea.
I doubt anybody at DC knows anymore.
Yeah.
Nothing tops after Crisis because they had Shadow of the Hawkman, which was a semi-successful series. They start it before Crisis, and then after Crisis, it kind of ends. And what it was, you know, there were these aliens who were hiding on Earth, and Hawkman was the only one who could find them, so he was basically hunting them down.
Wait a minute. Didn't you just... That was Rom Space Knight. Are you sure you're getting these stories right?
Yes. Yes, I'm sure.
Teasing.
But then, okay, look, we did the Superman reboot, and it sold really well. We did a kind of a Batman reboot. It sold really well. We did this. Let's redo Hawkman. So they bring in Tim Truman to do Hawkworld. Give Hawkman a completely different origin. This is the post-crisis Hawkman. Forgetting that they had already done post-crisis Hawkman. Oh, we could say all that happened before Crisis. No, because it crossed over with the current Superman. Ah, son of a bitch. Somebody's got to fix it. And in fixing it, they made it worse. And then also, Hawkman showed up in the Justice League. And it was the current Hawkman. And to fix it, they said, no, that's the Earth 2 Hawkman. That's a Hawkman from the 40s. Well, why was there a Hawkman in the 40s if Hawkman just showed up and he's wearing the same costume? And, oh, Christ. So by the time you get to Zero Hour, they've got four different versions of Hawkman that they've had in their continuity, and they try to fix that and make it worse. Oh, yeah.
And that's what was kind of neat about Marvel is, you know, they didn't really have that problem, because I'm sure there are stories they did that they don't refer to much, and there are stories they did.
Like Hercules dragging Manhattan
back
to sea? They got rid of that by hand-waving and going, yeah, Hercules made that up.
Yeah, see, that's an elegant way of doing it, because if you read the issue where he did that, he's just blowing. It could be very well. Yeah, he's blowing smoke. You're not quite sure how Spidey's super stories fit in the Marvel Universe? Well, we talked about that at the beginning. It was just a license deal, you know. What was more interesting with Marvel is how they would finish things. Shogun Warriors just kind of disappeared. Well, they ended up getting destroyed in Fantastic Four, but there was one robot left behind. Ironically, one that was never, you know.
One that was created by Marvel.
Yeah. Or, you know, Godzilla, well, yeah, he romped through the Marvel Universe, but
now
Dr. Dementis got a hold of him and kind of devolved him. You know, just little things like that, which for me growing up as a kid, I enjoyed the heck out of that. First of all, it made me feel that, yes, I was part of a bigger club because I got the reference and I know what was going on. I talked about it before sometimes, like when Garth Ennis took over the Punisher series. Well, you know, Punisher was dead and was an angel. Took care of it with a word balloon. Worked for angels once. Didn't like it. Told him where to go. It wasn't like a big thing where when, like, John Byrne got a hold of Doom Patrol, nothing that happened after this occurred. I'm going to ignore it all. Well, you know.
And not only ignore it, but just basically kind of hand wave it to, yeah, not only did it not occur, but I'm trying to think of the best way to put it. You're stupid for thinking it did.
And, you know, you think about it, it's like, okay, Spider-Man misremembers somebody. Yeah, I don't remember everybody I meet. I mean, especially if it's one person he met, you know, in an issue in 1966 or something, you know. It could be, I don't remember you. Ah, you never remember me or whatever.
You never remember.
You don't have to have perfect recall. I mean, you can also put a little you know, balloon is a Spider-Man may not remember, but we do. Kurt Busiek's Avengers were awesome because he wove everything in and actually referred to it in the letter column, you know, in case you didn't catch this, this is what's going on, and which made it such a wonderful read. I haven't read the entire thing, but Avengers Academy did the same thing, taking obscure characters and having fun with them. You know,
Avengers Forever.
Yes, another great
where
example.
He basically, Kurt Busiek fixing Avengers continuity and having a story. Because one of the problems I had after my brain kind of went, okay, there. And I'm trying to think of the best way to put this. When I became not so rabid a fan that I would get mad when they screwed up continuity, it then became where the stories, you know, Roy Thomas could take a continuity fix and weave it into something interesting. But by the 90s, you had people who weren't good at it, and it would just be, oh my God, everybody's just standing around talking about old stories and explaining why they're wrong. Or conversely, the John Byrne thing, where I don't know if Steve Englehart pissed in his Cheerios or not, but John Byrne systematically went through Steve Englehart's stories and basically undid all of them. Yeah, the whole the Vision Scarlet Witch crap that he pulled. The other things that he did in other books where he just, yeah, not only am I not like that story, but I'm going to write a story about why it was stupid and wrong and everybody involved was evil.
You know, and it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. I mean, I thought his solution where how there was a World War II Wonder Woman was actually kind of interesting. You know, he said, well, it happened to be Wonder Woman's mom who got time shifted and just hung out there for a while. I mean, it doesn't jive with, well, you know, she was kind of a meek secretary in the, you know, All-Star comic, but she was a real kick-ass in the regular one.
You know why that didn't work for me? Because I'd read Young All-Stars where they basically said there was no Wonder Woman in World War II, just like there was no Superman, there was no Batman. And Roy Thomas said, after Crisis, the energy of them were these other characters.
Okay, see,
Let me finish.
I have a deathmate moment.
But here's why it mattered. So the character who was the version of Wonder Woman, the new version of Wonder Woman, her daughter was a character named Fury, whose son was named Daniel, who was the new Sandman. So basically, Byrne, in his fuck this, Roy Thomas is an asshole and I will undo what he did, he basically made it so that DC's most prestigious book didn't quite fit into continuity.
Well, it didn't really fit into continuity anyways after Crisis. They just kind of told these guys, you know what? Sorry, Roy, you don't get to use Superman or Wonder Woman or any of these other guys. Deal with it. And I thought his explanation was kind of meh at best.
But the thing about Sandman that I liked was Neil Gaiman didn't do hand-waving bullshit. He said, I'm going to take what's there, and I'm going to use it. I'm going to play with it.
And see, you can also change that by the next guy writes a story. You can't tell me there wasn't a Wonder Woman in World War II. I remember her. There. You just fixed it with one word balloon. So both continuities are canon.
But there's a difference. One is I'm doing it to add. Byrne did it to subtract.
And we just added.
My problem is when you get somebody, and I'm always going to go back to his Vision story, where not only, the Vision never really had emotion. Sorry, dude, the first Vision story was called Even an Android Can Cry. You can say all you want, you were going back to basics. The story ended with the Vision crying. So do not pull the crap of, no, the Vision didn't have any emotions in his original appearance. Oh, and the Scarlet Witch's kids, they were actually two arms of a demon.
And you think that not you think that it doesn't weird. Apply nowadays? I got two words for you. Hail Hydra.
That's different. By the end of the story, Joe, by the end of the story, everything will be back the way
you know
it
what?
Was.
I'll tell you this. I read this issue. This is really a boring fucking comic. I mean, I actually lucked out and found one. And this was going to be a freaking, and I'll just kind of spoil it now. But, I mean, I read this thing. I think it would have, maybe had I approached it better. Well, no, that's not true. I approached it. I mean, I knew what happened. The fucking internet went insane because of the Hail Hydra. So I'm like, okay, let's read this to see if it works. Okay, I dig the continuity bits where, you know, from the Pleasant Hill and the young little cosmic cube running around. So they're tying it in with continuity, which is cool. But no, sir, I don't buy it. I mean, I was all excited to read this and go, okay, you know, I enjoyed Batman Superman. I don't care what the fucking internet said. I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to read this and try to enjoy it because I don't care what the internet said. Nope, doesn't matter. I found it boring and mostly unreadable. And if you would like my copy of it, send Corey an email and I'll mail it to you.
That's different from this is an affront and it undoes everything. Oh. No, it doesn't.
Well, maybe it does.
At the end of the story, all the toys will be back in the box. I guarantee it.
Maybe, maybe not.
Nope, it will.
We'll see.
And all, everybody who says that, oh,
as long as they put wings back on his head, I'm happy.
And everybody who says, well, the editors are saying that this is the way it is now. Let's remember that the editors also, when Captain America died, said, yep, he's dead. He's not coming back.
Yep, Superman's dead. He's gone. Bucky will never come back.
Got to tell you what, man.
Aunt May,
DC killed Superman and nobody cared.
Aunt May, nope. She's not a gilf. She's going to be old and craggly. Oh, wait a minute.
Superman died and no one cared.
Nobody
that
cared.
Just blows my mind.
No one cared.
So I guess maybe I still do have that little thing where, you know, but it's not the canon that makes me mad. It's the creator who goes out of their way to piss on someone in the past. And I got to be frank, I'm really glad that editors don't allow that anymore. And that's one of the reasons why John Byrne left Marvel. After X-Men Hidden Years, the pitches he made, he was told by the editors, no, you can't, we're not going to let you do a series where you're undoing stuff other people have done. And he took his ball and went home.
Bye-bye.
Then he went over to DC, did the same thing. Yeah, all those Doom Patrol stories that happened post-crisis, no, they didn't happen. Oh, those Wonder Woman stories, yeah, they didn't happen. No, they don't let you do that anymore. They may not be slavish to continuity like they were under Jim Shooter, but they will basically say, no, you don't get to just come in and break the toys and leave.
Speaking of toys, anybody going to San Diego Comic-Con? I really want the Mattel WWE Shockmaster exclusive.
Yes, me too.
Oh, if you can get us two. Oh, my God, that's so funny.
So let's talk the big canon thing, Joe.
Okay.
When they started work on the new Star Wars movies, they announced, and this was a press release and everything, the extended universe was gone.
Meh.
And I had a friend who I gamed with who at the time, for the next 6 months, bitched about it. And I didn't even get into why I think it's a good idea. Do you think it's ever a good idea for people who do continued stories to say, yeah, we're going to ignore that and we're just moving forward?
I can think of two examples where it works and, like you said, Star Wars where it doesn't work. Because, first of all, when they did the Star Wars originally, there was no idea that we'd have prequels. Nobody could foresee that Disney was going to buy it and want to continue it.
I learned something this week that I didn't know
about
Star Wars. Joe, you read Splinter of the Mind's Eye, right?
I tried.
See, I remember when it came out. Of course, I bought it immediately because it's a Star Wars book, and it's not an adaptation. It's the next part of the story. And then they kind of hand-waved it away. I did not know that what happened was Lucas, of course, didn't know it was going to be a hit, to the point where he was in Hawaii when it came out, because if it was a bomb, he didn't want to be anywhere near it. And when it started to make money, he wanted to do a sequel, but he didn't know if they would have enough money to make a big sequel. So he sat down with Alan Dean Foster to write out a treatment for the Star Wars sequel. By the end of the summer, when it had made more money than anything in forever, he said, oh, well, we're going to make a much bigger sequel. We're going to get more money, and we're going to do different stuff. And he let Alan Dean Foster take that treatment and turn it into the novel, Splinter of the Mind's Eye.
Hmm.
So all of this talk where I had all nine movies in my head when I wrote Star Wars.
And I have that Dynamite magazine where he said, oh, it's a nine-parter. We're in part whatever.
Part four.
So with Star Wars, and we're seeing a little bit of that with Star Trek, because they came up with the idea, you know what? We're never going to come back to the original universe. We're going to stay in the Christopher Pine Abrams Star Trek. Which we now find out is not true, because from what I hear of the new Star Wars or Star Trek series, it's back in the original universe, not the Christopher Pine universe, because there's no way you're going to get him to come do a TV show, because he's a big-time movie guy, you know. So they had all this continuity stuff set up. They had the Borg come and give a last hurrah, try to destroy the Federation. They didn't. They went away. As far as I know, they are away. They killed Janeway. They brought her back. I mean, they're wonderful books. They tied into a tight continuity. But if what they said is true, that's all canon. That's just going to have to go away. Never happen. And it reverses itself. For the longest time, Roddenberry didn't want anything to do with the animated series. And now, it's once he's gone, they accept that as canon.
Although the books have never been canon.
They haven't not been canon. They just are what they are. Because
the whole when they talked
original
about it,
Star Trek universe is gone with the advent of the movies.
Right.
So, again.
But back, even as they're leading up to Star Trek 5 and 6, they would have, you know, they wouldn't have online stuff, but in the magazines, people would ask, you know, there was blah, blah, blah in this book. Is that canon? And the official line from the media people would be, if it didn't happen in a movie or a TV show, it's not canon.
With the exception of the animated. Until Roddenberry died, then it was.
Right.
And see, that was also different because the books back then were standalone. They
yes.
weren't continue continuity. And so they did, again, they decided to switch that around. They said, you know what? We're never having
we're not
original captains coming back to play there. We're not having, you know, the original series guys show up on Next Gen, show up in the new movies with the exception of Spock. And as long as we're talking canon, I thought the way they brought the movies in was very elegant as well, because it wasn't. They took something that was well-established in the Star Trek universe. You can go back in time and screw things up, and did exactly that. They did the big what-if. What if somebody screws up the time and no one can do nothing about it? And then they brought Spock forward, which was kind of icing on the cake. So, again, it's something that could take place. It did take place. The big fights, of course, among the geeks are, well, how much of Enterprise is canon considering
that last episode.
Well, but the last episode couldn't have occurred because that occurred during the Next Generation time, which doesn't exist anymore.
Well, with Enterprise also, I remember when the last episode came out, people were arguing, are they saying that the entire series happened on a holodeck? And I remember at the time the people with Star Trek were like, we don't know. We're probably never going to make any more TV series. So you could think whatever you want.
And then the other people who thought about it a little harder are like, you know what? This is basically Riker's version of history. How many times in history do we go back and we discover, you know what? If you ever got us the true fact, if you ever got in a fight in the Deep South during the Civil War, guard your nuts. Because basically the goal of the fight is to denut your opponent. We always forget that type of shit because it's ugly, messy history. But, you know, in the case of if you ever find yourself in the Old South and you want to get in a fight, don't. It wasn't a phenomenon North. They didn't really fight that way in the North. It was just something, if you could deball your opponent,
yeah,
that's the way it was.
There's a lot about history that we don't get into. But with Star Trek, it's one of those things where I remember reading the books, and I used to really enjoy them because it was just, oh, you know, pick this up, read it, enjoy it, done with it. It was like an extra TV episode. Then they started doing, oh, there are these books, and they're going to have one with Kirk and one with Picard and one with Janeway and one with, and then it would be, oh, well, there are six books in this. And by the time it got to the stuff where it's, all right, you need to, this it starts in this series of three books and then goes over to these six books, and then over here it's like, I can't find the books. They're in the 90s, they were everywhere. And by the time they started doing that, they were in fewer and fewer places. And part of it was they were selling less and less and less. And I've said before, you can look at the timeline. You can look at the sales. When they started tying them all together, they had a bump, and then they just plummeted. Same for Star Wars. The book sold well and well and well and well. And then when it became, oh, these are the kids of Luke's kids, sales were in the toilet. Nobody cared. And when Disney said, yeah, we're not bound by that anymore. Because there's something to say about the fact that if I want to read a book, I don't want to have to have read 500 comic books, 50 novels, and played two video games to know who the hell the people in the book are.
Now, another example of canon, and this one you could argue right or wrong, would be Babylon 5. Because for the most part, everything in the Babylon 5 universe fits. It doesn't mean you have to read it. Case in point, one of the big reveals in Babylon 5 is that the bad guys, the Shadows, they had dropped one of their shadow ships on Mars. It had been there for the longest time, and some super secret quasi-government agency, a corporation and the PsyCorps, whatever, they found it, they were digging it up, and eventually it activated and a shadow ship came and retrieved it, which got the powers of thinking, hey, there's something going on out there. As you're watching Babylon 5, you don't know any of this shit because we don't know who the Shadows are to begin with. In the comic book, it's revealed that Michael Garibaldi, the security officer, actually knew about that because he happened to be on Mars when it happened. And if you read the comic, you got the whole story. In the TV show, it was just a quick throwaway line where he says, yeah, I was on Mars at that time. And they do a little CGI flashback, not showing him, but, you know, what was going on with the ship. Perfectly awesome way to fill in something. The end of Babylon 5 was done in one of the books, and I don't have it here with me. But it was one of those that in the early podcasts I talked about. So many people bought this one book. It was Legion of Darkness, that's what it was. It talked about the final ending of Babylon 5 as to turn what happened on Lando's planet, Centauri. And the final book of that series was the final chapter in Babylon 5. The reason it was there is because Straczynski knew they were never going to use it on a TV show. They were never going to use it anywhere else. So all the plot lines were wrapped up. People didn't necessarily read the first two books. They ran out and bought the third one. So here's me. Okay, I had bought the third books through wholesalers. I put them on the shelf when I had Hot Comics. When Hot Comics closed, I had book one, book two, so I took them home, read them, and then decided, okay, time for book three. Could not find it anywhere. Go online. Oh, sweet bejesus, it's a $125 paperback. Because so many people had bought it. Warner Brothers let it go out of print either through their own line or the license expired. And I'm like, how the hell am I going to read this? And eventually, I downloaded a bootleg copy, and I'm not one to do that because I'm always for wanting to give the creator a piece of the action. But how can you give him a piece of the action when there's no action to be found? The end of the story was, I believe on Free Comic Book Day, you and I went down to Mind's Eye, and I found it there for cover price.
And I was, and you were on that.
I was, oh man, I was like,
you were on that like Oprah on a canned ham.
Oh.
Wait, wait. Hey, catchy. Guess what? That means Jin's still not here.
Catchy, isn't it? So, anyways, it was just one of those things. So Babylon 5 is kind of a neat little universe where everything ties together. It astounds me to this day why Warner Brothers never goes back to exploit it, even to the other than the fact that some of the main characters and actors have passed away. Straczynski maintains the movie rights. He's talking maybe a reboot. Everything else is Time Warner. But, you know, and Straczynski will talk occasionally about how Time Warner, you know, we need to get ourselves a Star Trek / Star Wars type property to exploit. He kind of raises his feeble hand. Right? Why does he care? He's out doing screenplays, probably making more money. But, you know, that's even something, too. You know, you think about a property like that. There's probably more stories to tell. Good Lord, they're coming out with another Battlestar Galactica one, the original one, not the remake one. Oh, but it won't be canon. Only the original 13 shows were, and that Galactica 80. Sorry if it was on.
No. They had 20. They had 26 shows. They had a full season.
Oh, sorry. I'm at Galactica 80.
I remember. Because when Galactica was canceled, of course, you know, oh, it's not fair, it's not right. I had bought the novels, which were basically novelizations of the episodes.
Oh, yeah. I remember buying a lot of those, too.
And I bought the comic, and I remember one of my first conventions, I actually asked Jim Shooter, Battlestar Galactica's been canceled. Is the comic going to keep going? And he was like, yeah, kid, it's going to keep going. And I look back on it now, it's like, well, of course I loved it. It's Walt Simonson. Now,
even though
he
made Jolly the size of Volkstaff, he was
huge. That's because it's Walt Simonson.
Oh, he was never that big in the show.
No, but Walt Simonson does that. Oh. But the inking by Klaus Janson just completely overpowered. I love Klaus Janson's inking, but it did not work on Walt Simonson. It just didn't work. But even going back now, it's Walt Simonson stories. Oh. They're fun. Walt Simonson was great.
So the question is, in your mind, is that canon?
In my mind, those are the only stories that really happened because I went, when I got the sci-fi channels, oh, look, they're showing the original Battlestar Galactica. And it's fucking terrible. It's terrible.
Yeah, it's a basically a buddy flick. You know,
it's
Starbuck and Apollo doing the 80s buddy shtick in space.
It's Starsky and Hutch.
That's with, like I said, the buddies. Starsky and Hutch, they're buddies.
You're not letting me finish. The early episodes they spent money on, but by episode 10, you could tell that the network was cutting how much they were paying because it's wow, they're using old sets from other shows.
Randy Mantooth was on it. Ray Bolger. I'm trying to think of what else. Fred Astaire was Starbuck's dad.
It's kind of like with V. By the time you get to the last like 6-7 episodes of that TV series, they were firing people right and left. So characters would be, oh, yeah, he went to Chicago to fight for the resistance.
Now, did you ever read?
Or, oh, yeah, he got vaporized by the aliens. And 3 minutes later, nobody cares.
Did you ever read Richard Hatch's Battlestar Galactica hardcovers?
I did not.
They were kind of fun. Again, you had to read them in order, and unless you're watching when they were published, they're hard to do. But he did it. He did the same thing. You know, he popped it forward a generation. Boxy is now Troy. You know, he's young warrior. There's a young warrior named Sheba who we find out is Starbuck's kid eventually, but from whom? They were fun books. You know, again, In my version of continuity, yeah, you got the TV shows and then the comic book. The Marvel ones take place in between that whole weird period of where he ended up on a Western and fought Red Eye and Ice Station Zero was pretty good. That ice gun on Planet Zero or Ice, whatever, that was a good two-parter. Alex Hyde-White was in it, too. And
our buddy. He loves us.
So
probably still to this day talks about us fondly.
Well, one of these days we'll find out, because there's that Doomed, the untold story of the Fantastic Four, which is tied up in some type of legal mumbo-jumbo. And the guy who's doing it keeps talking on eBay about, well, okay, these rights have been settled, this has been settled. So eventually he'll be able to release that documentary.
Now, have you contacted him about the fact that Alex Hyde-White was at your shop when it was supposed to premiere at the Mall of America?
I did, and he talked about getting back to me, but I think that was when the legal shit hit the fan.
Because
I sent him a link to the picture and said, you know, hey, he was at our store when he found out about it.
When he found out!
Well, we went from the store signing, he went home being a motel room, of course, at the Thunderbird. And then when he came out, he was with his girlfriend, and he was like, they sold the rights to it. He bought it, 20th Century Fox. He was all bummed out during dinner.
And he'd said, they're giving it to Chris Columbus.
Oh.
And we were like, they're giving it to the Home Alone guy.
Yeah.
Holy crap, that's a big deal.
And I do remember talking with him, because I said, you know, I just remember, you know, I'd see actors like show up on all different shows, like the, you know, Brent Spiner, not only was in Star Trek, but he was in Cheers for a moment, he was on Night Court, you know, all these things from Paramount. And you say, I hadn't thought of Paramount. So he kind of cheered up a little after that. But you know, can you imagine, he's been going around the country, him and his co-stars, trying to build up ground support for this movie they had to know wasn't all that good, only to have the rug pulled out from under them. But it'd be interesting to see the more of the behind-the-scenes stuff, because, you know, we've talked about it before. I mean, Roger Corman had to do that or he would lose the rights.
Yep.
And I have a bootleg of it. I mean, we used it at one of our bad movie parties.
You know who would not have a bootleg of a movie like that?
Oh, who's that?
These guys, our sponsors.
Believe it or not, kids, this silliness has actual real sponsors. Our first sponsor is Graze.com. Graze gives you healthy snacks sent to your house. You can have them delivered weekly, bi-weekly, monthly, and your first box is free if you use the code CORYS3R5B. Our second sponsor is Bombas. Bombas socks are some of the best socks in the world, and remember, for every pair you buy, they donate a pair to a homeless shelter or other worthy cause. Just go to bombas.gotocloud.org/SF30. That's right, those are our ads. Go check out our sponsors.
And after we do the sponsors, we always talk to Joe about, Joe, what's going on the eBays?
Oh, I got all sorts of stuff going on the eBays. The sales are picking up again. Sold a couple oddball things, and I'm not sure if I've covered these before, because that last two-hour one we did was a blur. A lot of fun.
That was a lot of fun.
It was fun.
We're going to have more guests, you know.
We are. Are they going to bring pizza?
No.
I don't care.
You'll care. We've got some big-name guests coming up. And should I tease?
Yes.
Why don't you talk about your eBay stuff, and I will get ready for the tease.
All right. While he's getting ready for the tease, I'm just talking about a couple things that I sold. I've been trying to, as you know, pare down my vast accumulation of crap, and we got some big stuff gone just recently. I had one of them Star Wars George Lucas Stormtrooper disguise action figures in a case, and my daughter actually gave it to me because she was like, I don't want this anymore. Okay. So I sold it on eBay. A Snoopy jigsaw puzzle, one of those 550-piece ones, called Low-Fat Meal Over San Monica. And this was actually bought when Camp Snoopy went out of business. And both these things I talked about, I was like, well, I have no idea if they're worth anything. So I check on eBay, and holy crap on a crutch, they're worth something. So, again, if you see anything on eBay you like, for example, I just put on a copy of The Walking Dead number 150 that was signed in red by Stefano Guadiano. I put up a copy of Jim Ballant's Tarot, Witch of the Black Rose, and if you know anything about that, there's a little...
Is that the one? Is it the issue where the character says, your vagina is haunted?
I didn't read it. I just put it on eBay.
That's my favorite comic panel of all time.
And I got a Cavewoman, the River Styx, special cover C. C as in nude. So if you're going to buy them, you've got to buy them because I did cover up the nudie bits. But as usual... If you see anything you like and you do buy it, send me a quick note either at crazycomics@gmail.com or through eBay system itself. eBay would probably like it better that way. And let me know you bought something, and I will grab a random piece of stuff. It could be this here Captain America 1 where it says Hail Hydra that is just terrible. Or it could be a copy of DC Universe Rebirth. Something that I finally read, but we'll talk about that in Freaking and Geeking a little later.
Joe?
Yes?
This is episode 254. That means that we now have more episodes than Leave It to Beaver, which had 234 episodes. Friends, which had 236 episodes. Baywatch, which had 243 episodes. The Dean Martin Show, which had 245 episodes, which blows my mind. The WWE AM Raw is up to 249 episodes. They're always going to be 5 episodes behind us, minimum. We have more episodes than The Andy Griffith Show, which had 249. More episodes than MASH. How many episodes did MASH have, Joe?
No idea.
251. More episodes than The Jeffersons, which had 253. We are now tied with Bewitched. And next week, we will be tied with Happy Days. Think about that. And coming up on King of the Hill. But there's a podcast out there where we're going to have they started about, let's see, 4 or 5 years before us. We're going to pass them. And they're not happy about it.
Well, tough tiddlywinks.
And they may actually come on the show to complain. How's that for a tease?
Well, let me ask you this.
Okay.
Are you interested in getting on Comic Book Men?
Not especially, because I don't want to go to New Jersey.
Oh, but it's the shrine. You fit this because you're a quirky comic geek with a supersized personality. The question.
But I don't have any really cool collectibles like they have on the show.
Yeah, that's the other thing. If you got something comic related or retro pop culture collectible you've been longing to buy or sell. They're actually looking for people. Go to comicbookmencasting.com and apply. Got to be 18 years older to apply, and you have to travel to Red Bank, New Jersey, which I did.
I find that interesting because the show started. Remember, it was an hour-long show when it started, which was way too long. But it started with, here's the kind of stuff that quirky things they do in comic shops. And it was, okay, they're going to do stand-up comedy. They're going to do imitations. They're going to do this. And the last couple seasons, they've really gotten rid of all that. And, you know, other than we're going to have Stan Lee in the store, it's more these people come in and they got cool things. And here's the kind of stuff that happens in the store normally. And I like that a lot better than, oh, we're going to go and we're going to try and find whatever. You know, when they would leave, oh, there's somebody brings the Batmobile by, and then something quirky happens with the gang as they're driving the Batmobile. It's more, nope, just talk about what's going on in the shop. And as they're looking for more people, I hope it means they're going to keep it down a little more down to earth. But the way those shows normally work is they have these casting things. And you're told when you go in, all right, you're going to haggle over the price, and here's how the haggling works. Because I saw behind the scenes on one of those pawn shop shows, mm-hmm. where they basically, the person who supposedly owns the shop isn't the one talking to the person selling the stuff, or they will bring someone in and say, you're going to sell this to them. And the other way I found out about it, they on one of those pawn shows, they had Lex Luger come in to sell one of his robes. And Luger actually didn't want to sell his robe. So what they did, they made a robe for him to bring in and sell.
Don't pull at the strings, they all fall apart.
But I'm actually really surprised that Comic Book Men's going to a seventh season. Out of all the reality shows, it's changed a lot, and it's probably helped by the fact that it's on after Walking Dead. Because remember when AMC moved it to a different night and had three or four other reality shows with it? They're all gone. Comic Book Men's still around. And I keep hearing Kevin Smith's going to have a late-night talk show on AMC, but I haven't seen Boo about when it starts. You know when it's going to start? When the next issue of Daredevil Target comes out.
It could happen. I mean, Leah Thompson's returning to Howard the Duck. So, hey, is a change.
Thanks for stealing one of my geekings. That story was so cool, and her sense of humor about it was fantastic.
Oh, and she's beautiful.
Yeah, she still looks cute.
Hmm.
She was the only reason I watched Caroline in the City. Sometimes I would go, oh, yeah, there's Caroline in the City. This story's stupid, but boy, she's cute.
I was kind of like that. I'd be like, oh, I'll watch her for a little bit. Okay, that's enough. She's not on anymore.
What was that one, Just Shoot Me? I only watched that for Laura San Giacomo because she's cute. And now she's vanished off the face of the earth. You know what's not vanished off the face of the earth?
Karen Gillian?
Freaking and geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on? Hello?
I think I covered most of my freaking. Captain America, shit in yellow, massive headache. So considering where I'm at, I'm doing okay. How about you, Corey? What are you freaking on? Other than me stealing your geeking.
Well, I've been working so much and getting behind on podcasts and everything that last week I issued an apology for being late on Novelcast. And quite honestly, I feel terrible about the fact that I'm late on it, even though I have only gotten people who say, oh, man, it's okay. It's okay. No, it's not okay. I'm not okay when I'm late. One of the things that really has helped Crazy Comics and Stories continue to build its audience is that every Monday the episode is there. I usually have it up late on Sunday, and if you go to the Facebook page, you get the little sneak preview, and then Monday I announce it on Twitter and everything else. But I don't like the fact that I make a promise to people that I'm going to deliver a podcast, and I don't do it. So, not happy about that. Kind of freaking about it. And this is a weird freaking, and Joe, you could probably comment on it as well because you've kind of made hints about it in the past. My friend Tommy got married over the weekend, and while I'm so happy for him, it's so cool. His wife is great. They are perfect for each other. When I go to weddings, I get mopey because my wedding was a nightmare. We had just moved to Minnesota. We didn't know anybody. One person, out of all the people we invited, one person showed up, and it was one of these people who we'd met when my wife was one of these people who after work would hang out at Perkins for 3 or 4 hours, and I would have to go there too. Were you ever part of the hang out at Perkins crowd, Joe?
Not really.
People would play cards. And I know the waitresses hated us, which is why I always tipped at least as much as our meal was. But it was one of the guys from Perkins who said, oh, I wrote a song for you guys. And I recently, well, my son wanted to watch the wedding video, so it was not recently. It was like, I don't know, 10 years after. And I'm listening to the song, and I'm like, he didn't write that. That's this song by this singer. So I get all mopey because my wedding was kind of a downer and it's probably never going to happen for me again. So I get a little mopey at the weddings. But because of that, the house is a goddamn mess. I haven't been home.
How can you tell? Oh, never mind.
Oh, I could tell.
Maybe you can, but I sure as hell couldn't.
Oh, you could tell. You would come in and go, why is there clothing on the couch? Because I got home, I dumped out the gym bag and went, fuck it, I'll deal with it later. So hopefully, we're recording the podcast early, I can at least, you know, kind of get caught up on some stuff. So freaking about that, I did not have time to read any comics at all other than what I was reading on the Marvel Unlimited app before bed at the group home. So feeling a little burned out, feeling a little bummed. Joe, what are you geeking on? What are you loving?
Oh, I got lots of things to geek on.
That's good. Didn't pull me out of this tailspin.
Didn't we talk about this last week, although off air we did. I went to a play a couple weekends ago called Complicated Fun, which was the Minneapolis music scene that happened, oh, circa 1977 through about 1990 or so. And while I can honestly say I wasn't a big part of that, when I worked at the college radio station from about 84 through 87, I didn't realize a lot of the bands that I was playing were actually local. I mean, obviously everybody knew Prince because Prince kind of took the whole Minneapolis music scene and put it on the map. But you're talking bands like Suicide Commandos, Curtis A, who person, not a band, The Replacements, The Suburbs, Husker Du, The Jets, no idea they were local, Trip Shakespeare, Babes in Toyland, Mint Condition, Jayhawks, all these bands that I played on the radio not realizing they were part of the scene, and I was kind of on a fringe of it, well, me and my cohort, and I've talked about it in the past, and it's something coming up on a solo Joe as soon as I can get the sound bites organized. I'm telling you, those sound bite police are tough. I might have overdid it in that first one. But they
is that like the Dream Police?
I can't say no more. They live inside my head. But this play was a lot of fun. It was down at the History Theater, downtown St. Paul. And Corey, I'd drag you to it, but the last showing of it was May 29th, and it was just a lot of fun. I've been down there before. I was there when Baron von Raschke did his show talking about his time in the AWA. So, so it just reminds me there's always a lot of little things going on around that if I'm lucky, I will catch. Speaking of catch, I've plowed through a couple graphic novels. As you know, now that I get a little bit – getting less and less downtime at work, but I devoured – Empowered Volume 9. This is a book through Dark Horse by Adam Warren. The gist is Empowered, the name of the superhero, has a super suit that gives her all sorts of awesome powers. However, as it gets ripped, she loses those powers, often gets tied up and spanked. And with Adam Warren at the art, it's not too bad. But he does more in this one graphic novel than I swear some comic series do in years. And it's a fun series to pick up and read. He's got a couple comic books out on it, so you can pick it up and give it a try before jumping in, because each book runs anywhere from $15 to $19. And I've talked about it before. Earlier one had a superhero smackdown that to this day leaves me shaken. It was so vivid and just disturbing and so out of the blue, and it was just incredible. Well, definitely pick up Empowered if you get a chance or you're looking for something out of the ordinary to read. Picked up volumes 2 and 3 of Alex and Ada, Jonathan Luna, Sarah Vaughn. It's only 3 issues, or I should say 3 volumes, and they're not very expensive. They're worth picking up. Essentially, Alex is a lonely guy. Ada is a sentient robot. Well, it doesn't quite start out that way, and she wasn't quite bought for sentience to begin with. But as the series goes on, I can't help but think this would make a great movie. It could make a good miniseries on Netflix or something. The story is compelling. I mean, I read the first one and cursed myself for not picking up 2 and 3, and they were delivered last box day. So I was able to pick these up and, again, in one night, kind of went through it all. And good stuff to pick up. So next time you're at your shop, figure it out. I did pick up a book called Secret Identity, The Fetish Art of Superman's Co-Creator, Joe Shuster, with an introduction by Stan Lee. Found it on eBay dirt cheap. it was just one of those that I've been aware of it for some time, and I'm not quite sure when he did all this. It must have been, you know, after he realized he wasn't getting squat from Superman. But I'm going to read through it, check it out, and see. I'm just looking at some of the pictures, but they don't have a date on it at the moment. But I'll read more about it. If there's anything of interest, I'll let you know. Or if you like.
There were a few artists who did that, including there are rumors that Steve Ditko did fetish art.
Oh, with Eric Stanton, yeah.
Yes, because he shared a studio with Eric Stanton, who did a lot of it, and Ditko may or may not have drawn some of that art. And I find it interesting that people are continuously debating that as if it's important. But there were a lot of people, especially in the early days of comics, who were offered money to draw dirty comics. And I know this because Will Eisner talked about how when he started doing his studio with Iger, they were offered a lot of money to draw what were known as Tijuana Bibles.
Oh, yeah.
Which were, they would take famous comic strips and do porn versions of them. And Eisner chose not to do it because, A, he didn't feel comfortable doing that sort of artwork, but also because they were printed by the mob.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't want to get in bed with the mafia as part of his career. But there were a lot of people who did that sort of stuff. I have heard stories about how Kirby was offered that sort of thing and never did it because he didn't feel comfortable with it. And the more I have read about Kirby, even when he worked for the pulps, because he, like everybody else who worked for Martin Goodman, didn't just do the comics. He would also do illustrations for the pulp magazines as well. He always made sure that he wasn't working in what were known as the spicy pulps, because he just didn't feel comfortable drawing that sort of stuff.
Last thing I'll be, well, I should say last. I did find a Danger Mouse toy at Toys R Us today. So that was kind of cool. I dig Danger Mouse.
Oh, Rick.
And for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, that's what Wikipedia is for.
And Netflix.
I did pick up, I must have brain farted and not picked up DC Universe Rebirth, because I don't see it anywhere in my, that I actually ordered it through Discount Comic Service. So I just ran down to the source, picked it up. I wish I didn't know how this damn thing ended, because I'd have shit a brick if I'd have been reading this and gotten to that last page where, if you haven't seen it by now, you're, God bless you, you haven't read the internet. But I mean, this book alone would get me going on DC. 2 years worth? Well, maybe not, but it was well written. The art was fun. It tied into all sorts of different things. Again, what's canon, what isn't? Well, this book basically says it all is and puts it all in. It kind of brings you up to date on a couple things I didn't know. The one thing I didn't do, I did read Justice League 50. I haven't gotten Superman 52. I don't recall if I even ordered it. Did you get Superman 52, Corey?
No, I did not. I'd given up on Superman. I tried when John Romita Jr. came on, and I remember reading a couple issues and Geoff Johns lost interest. Because remember, it was a big deal. Geoff Johns and John Romita Jr. will be doing Superman. Yeah. And then he drifted away after a couple issues, yeah. And John Romita Jr. drifted away after a couple issues, and I had drifted away before then. And I don't know, the new 52 Superman, if it's not written by Grant Morrison, I don't care.
And I guess if you want to throw out a spoiler warning, but you've already talked about it a bit on this show.
He's dead,
yep,
Jim.
And he's dead. He's apparently not coming back because his energies, where'd they get this idea? Apparently flowing into other beings who are going to be Superman. So if you're like me going through previews, seeing that your one Superman, maybe two titles have suddenly become multiple Supermen. Sounds like an odd porn title. This is That's why, because they say this takes place after Justice League 50 and Superman 50 Dune, so read those first. Well, I've been reading Justice League and yeah, whatever. And Superman 52, I guess I don't have to worry about because it just deals with he died. So.
And again, I'm going to say Superman died and no one cared. I have read nothing online. Not even on Facebook has anybody said anything. And to me, that just shows that how little emotional investment people had in the version of Superman that they had in the comics. That should tell you something right there. I do also think that they're going to start building to something, because with Action Comics, aren't they at like 965?
There's an ad for it in here.
But they're getting close to Action Comics 1000.
Yeah.
You know they have to do something, because this will be the first American comic that has not only gotten to, well, it'll be the first American comic that's gotten to issue 1000, but will say it's issue 1000.
Yeah.
Joe, what other American comic got to issue 1000 but never noted it in the comic? Ask the Joe.
The only thing come to mind was either like a giveaway.
Nope.
Or Treasure Quest.
Nope. Four Color Comics.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Four Color Comics got to over 1,000 issues.
The ad in this is for Action Comics 957.
There you go.
Metropolis has a new Man of Steel, and his name is Lex Luthor. I will applaud the fact that DC's lowered the price to $2.99. I will bemoan the fact they're going twice monthly. It makes me wonder if we're going to have half a comic and half filled with ads, or if it will be a legit $2.99 comic. And again, like mini freaking, if the freaking internet's just gave away the ending of this. Did you read this, Corey, knowing the ending, or was it a surprise?
No, they announced the ending in USA Today the Friday before it came out.
Oh, see, I don't read USA Today, so it wouldn't make a difference.
But because it was in USA Today, everybody had it.
Yeah.
So it was all over Facebook. It was all over Twitter. It was all over every comic book thing. I heard it on the news. Jeff Johns did an interview on TV. I forget where, but they showed clips of it on CNN and MSNBC. So it was one of those where you could not escape it, much like Captain America when Captain America died. It was all over TV. And my feeling is if it's all over TV, I'm not going to worry about spoiling it.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Now, for me, it would not have been a big oh my God moment. The oh my God moment in Rebirth was Wally West and Barry Allen hugging.
And see, that was spoiled for me too, because I saw that
wonderful.
I saw that image before I picked it up.
Yep.
So,
but still,
again, I'm reading
that
this.
Was the moment where I went, oh, I'm so happy.
Yeah, see, it didn't do anything for me because part of the story is whether or not Wally's going to live or die. And it was a perfect setup because as you turn the page, it happened. It didn't like, it wasn't on an opposite page. It was just perfectly laid out, which I appreciate in comics, you know, as you're turning, and then that panel. Again, maybe had I not seen it ahead of time, it was bad enough they ruined the ending. I'm curious to see where they go with this. I could see Dr. Manhattan being the big boogeyman. I cannot see Dr. Manhattan pulling the rest of the Watchmen over to the 52 universe. Maybe sending them out as extensions of his powers. You know, I mean, he already killed Rorschach. I mean, what's the point? So it'd be interesting to see what they do, or if maybe that's what happens. Manhattan decides, you know what, I've made them, they're real, whatever. I don't like that idea. I mean, if they want to have Dr. Manhattan be the big boogeyman, I'm down with that. So anyways, it was fun. It's got me intrigued. Corey, what are you freaking on? What word in the dictionary is spelled incorrectly?
We did my freaking. Now it's time for geeking.
Oh, see? Incorrectly. That's what's spelled incorrectly. And I was wrong. What are you geeking on?
Not only am I loving the Marvel unlimited. But now they are getting, they're starting to have all of the books that came after Secret Wars. And I know that it's not selling as well as they would have liked, but boy, these are fun books. I read Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. Amy, I didn't realize that Amy Reeder, who an artist that I enjoy and has been at the convention a lot, and she is a co-writer on the book. There are all these things that are kind of flooding into Marvel Unlimited, and every Monday, you know, it's here's a week's worth of books. And being at the group home, I have a little trouble getting to sleep, so I just will read two or three or four of them before I go to bed. The interface is perfect. The downloads are perfect. The stories are actually formatted to fit the app. There's very few of the two-page spreads which don't work digitally for me. So these comics were really very much made to be read on a tablet. And they work very well that way. Even the books like Squirrel Girl, which, you know, oh, it's our second number one in a year. You can read that first issue, and everything you need to know is there. For all of them, they're very good entry points. It's just a lot of fun. I also downloaded it onto my phone. And if you don't have a tablet and you're reading it on your phone, it shows panel to panel.
Oh, good.
And I like the panel to panel on my phone. I'm not a big fan of it on the tablet, but you could tell that they are set up to be read that way because you swipe the next panel, swipe the next panel, swipe the next panel. Other apps, such as Comixology's app, has that, but it's not as good. Marvel, you could tell that the artists are actually designing it for to be read that way. And another thing they are adding on the Marvel Unlimited, they're not just adding the new stuff. They added another six issues of the app Timely Comic Leading Comics, which is another of the 40s books, which means they're still adding stuff from Timely. They're still adding stuff from Atlas. They're still adding stuff from the 40s and 50s, which means the stuff's being newly scanned just to be put in the app. And they're doing a really, really good job with it. There was also an article that came out where they finally have some data from both Comixology, because it's owned by Amazon, and Apple about sales, digital sales. They're now about, for Marvel and other books, DC we don't know, DC keeps everything proprietary, but they're running about one-fifth of the sales, you know, the physical copy sales. But here's the thing they learned. The digital sales are not cannibalizing the physical sales. Because there was a lot of worry, oh, you know, when people buy the digital, they're not gonna buy the physical anymore. Nope, the digital sales are growing without a similar drop in the physical sales. So digital is growing the market. And I think that because Marvel is doing such a diverse line of books, and they're aiming at female readers and younger readers and, you know, non-traditional comics readers, we're going to get more and more of the books like Squirrel Girl, like Howard the Duck, like Ms. Marvel, that grow the readership. And anything that grows the readership is good, because the more people coming into shops or going online and buying comics means the more comics we're going to get. The other thing I am geeking on is I am looking at the summer TV schedule, and there's not a lot there. And you may ask, Corey, why are you geeking about that?
Why isn't your DVR full?
Joe, you may ask, Corey, why are you geeking about that?
What kind of call does a marathon runner always make? Long distance?
You may ask, Corey, why are you geeking about that?
Well, we better hurry up because we're pushing 2 hours here. What am I supposed to... Corey, why are you geeking about that?
Because now I can finally get caught up. I'm 2 months behind on wrestling. I have two seasons of the series Tyrant. I have three seasons of the series Orphan Black. I might actually be able to get caught up. Oh, shit. Look at all the podcasts I'm doing this summer. Never mind. We've got big interviews planned for Solitaire Rose Radio. Huge. People who I look at and go, people who I look at and go, how the hell did I get that interview?
It's because you grew hair on that chin of yours.
You know, you keep it up, and I'm going to shave it off permanently. And I told you what happened the last time when I had the full beard and I shaved it off, what happened, right?
What?
I changed both jobs and got rid of a bunch of people in my life who shouldn't have been around me anymore.
Corey.
So you just be careful.
I was able to read Deathmate without puking just by keeping your picture as a bookmark.
You haven't read Deathmate.
You're right. I tried. It was terrible.
Liar.
It was terrible.
But you made it through without puking.
Yeah, that's because I got your picture right here.
Because we had Vince McMahon ready to go.
Oh, God. Oh, oh. I thought I could do it, but I couldn't.
And there's all kinds of wrestling coming up. This Saturday before this episode drops, I could say that. Jen's not on the
and
show.
And I can drop.
Yeah.
Oh, that was more of a bounce.
We had Ring of Honor in town at Hopkins. I love going to see Ring of Honor. Ring of Honor is always a lot of fun. And next weekend is Wrestlepalooza down at First Avenue.
Hey, working weekends.
So there's all sorts of wrestling coming up. This is a busy month for me. I warned people, if you want to hang out with me, you better do it before this month. Because it's going to be a busy month.
Busy, busy.
Believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on about funny books for over 90 minutes.
Thank you.
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most. Joe?
Impossible is just a big word thrown about by small men who find it easier to live in the world they've been given than to explore the power that they have to change it. Impossible is not a fact. It's an opinion. Impossible is not a declaration. It's a dare. Impossible is potential. Impossible is temporary. Impossible is nothing. Muhammad Ali.
I'm going to argue with that because, Joe, do you think we could do a 30-minute episode? That's impossible.
That's impossible. Corey, back to you.
Yes?
Who wants to? My music or your music? Holly, come here. Would you say in your most sultry tone, hit my music?
Hit my music.
Another fine podcast from Solitaire Rose Networks.
The end.